I think this is going to be one of my favorite episodes on the show today. We're going to be talking about, I think, the most common thing in business and really in life, and that is unpredictability. Unpredictability is the most constant thing in the universe. As you guys probably remember, not too long ago, life was great. We're all chugging along, having a great time. And then, unpredictably, we were hit with this thing called COVID. COVID screwed us all, changed everything. This is a constant thing. We will always have issues. And I think that what's going to separate the leaders from the followers or the people who make it versus the people who don't make it is going to be our guest today, and that is Anton Skornyakov. Anton Skornyakov has made a career out of helping organizations manage unpredictability. He is an agile coach, and I'm so just turned on to be digging into this subject matter because unpredictability is really what CEOs, entrepreneurs do for a living. Anton, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Bert.
All right, so before we get into this, just give us a quick background about who you are, because you didn't start off as a business coach. So give us your background and how you got from where you were to where you are today.
Right. Thank you. So actually, my business life started as an entrepreneur. So right after graduating physics and maths, I've started try to start several startups, and some of them were successful, some of them were not that successful as the startup life goes.
Right.
I think it's like 15, 16 years ago it started, and in those days, what I've done, I guess, well, was listen to one guy whose name is Eric Ries, who was at that time actually, just writing his blog, Startups Lessons Learned, and my startups were just following him, and then I later he wrote the book, The Lean Startup, and so forth. And what I basically have done was after having built or tried to build my own startups, I started to consult or work with people that I knew because I was the CEO of those startups that I've built. Kind of my network was other CEOs. So I basically helped them because they found something helpful about the way I was thinking about their business models. And at some point I came along other people that were certified Scrum trainers like I am today. And I realized, oh, those things that I've been kind of trying to figure out of how to teach people, how to explain all those concepts for a couple of years, I realized all of those things, they already exist. They use a little different language, and they are way more in software. But if I just do that, I will be able to learn and apply everything that I'm doing there with much more rigor, with much better tools. And yes, and what I'm doing now is kind of coming back and taking all of the stuff that people are using in the software world and have been honing over the last, I think, 30, 40 years, because in software, people have to deal with unpredictability all the time. And I think we are dealing with it more and more outside of anything that has to do with software today. And so using those tools and bringing them back into to everyone, you could say, is what I'm doing mostly today.
Gotcha. Again, in my business career, entrepreneurial career, to me, unpredictability is really sometimes the gift, right? You've seen a lot of companies that will pivot. They will they were heading in one direction, and all of a sudden they're hit with something, and that causes a pivot. I'm a big fan of something that Mike Tyson said, and I think this works for just about everybody, and that is everybody has a goal until you get hit in the face. And it changes everything, and it's like, yeah, I'm going to beat this guy, or I'm going to become, our company's going to go do this, or we have this idea, and all of a sudden you get hit in the face, and oh, okay. And so sometimes you can pivot and go with that. And then sometimes you have to rethink and redeploy. And just kind of a give us a quick synopsis of agile. What is agile? Because I always thought primarily that, as you mentioned, agile is has to do, at least the first time I started hearing about it, had to deal with Silicon Valley. So give us your thought. What is agile? If I was to ask you, what does an agile coach do? Well, give me your thoughts on that.
Well, basically, agile coaches do are coaches, so they are not consultants. They're not giving advice on what to do, but they are basically teaching and supporting organizations on, building themselves the resources to become adaptable. So basically, they're almost always called in places where there's some unpredictability there. And I would love for just very short moment to dig a little bit into this unpredictability that you started off with, because it's a great there's this other thing that no battle plan ever survives the contact with the enemy, right? There is this thing. And you started with the COVID, right? This being
Right.
this big thing that changes. But there is unpredictability on so many levels, because maybe you're listening to this and you think, well, how often does something like COVID hit us, right? I don't have to be prepared for that every year, right? I don't I really hope we don't have to be prepared for that kind of thing to happen
Right.
too often. But to today, I'm really really I'm really serious about this. I think you will not have a job if you don't learn to deal with unpredictability in 5 years at all. Because what you need to understand about the business world right now, what we have been able to do, and I mean humans, what we have been able to do is we have been able to automate everything that is predictable. Whenever something is predictable, I can either have a robot do it if it's manual work, or I can have a program do it. And today with the AI, this is what is changing right now. More and more things that are a little bit predictable, they start to be completely automatable using AI. So the jobs that we are going to be earning money for, humans, are founded in our ability. It's a very human ability to adapt. This is maybe the core ability that we have with our brains. And many ways of how we build our work environments in organizations, they actually prevent us from being adaptable. And understanding that kind of thing is a little bit at the core of the book, and it also is at the core of those agile coaches. So they bring to finish the answer to your question. What we bring is basically an understanding of how differently to structure work. But then also, when you understand how to do this, typically it's really hard to just implement that. And that's something for example, when you want to become adaptable, it means that you need to be able to learn, so you need to open up for feedback. But
Yes.
being open to feedback is an emotionally hard thing. So suddenly you start working and start talking about very tough business objectives and very clear results and money being made, and you immediately come to a place where there is resistance that have to do with emotional resistance. And that's what makes this job so interesting, because it's really dealing with the hard facts and also very soft, very human nature that we bring to work. And to finish the other thought part that I started to give you a little couple of more examples of unpredictability. So those big things like a crisis, like a war or an epidemic, those are the big things.
Right.
There is smaller things. There is technology being changed all the time, the AI, right? And there is the big AI, but there is also the little AIs that are being created that are maybe disrupting your particular field of work. But then there is also smaller things. Like today, for example, when you're working in a nonprofit or a government organization or a commercial organization, you may decide, well, let's introduce a CRM, right? Because we have people, they're not working as coordinated with each other. So let's introduce that. Or let's increase the quality of our client service, or let's increase any kind of change any kind of our processes. And whenever what you're doing as a result is changing how people behave, how your own people behave, or how your customers behave, this is unpredictable. Because if you are an entrepreneur, you can offer people something and they will just, they would take it and use it differently from what you thought, or they will not take it at all.
Right. Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, as far as probably the most unpredictable thing is our employees. That would be the first, cohorts that are you're dealing with unpredictability. You could have your right-hand person, you rely on them, they're super trustworthy, and they do something unpredictable. They might leave for a better offer, they sadly pass away, maybe they betray you. And so this is constant thing, this unpredictability. And I think, to your point, you can either resist it, and in most cases, that's a short road to failure, or you learn how to unleash it, or you learn how to pivot, or use it to your advantage.
Absolutely.
One of my favorite stories in that, that kind of applies to this is the post-it notes, good old post-it notes. And so the team that was working on post-it notes, they were supposed to create a super glue, kind of like Gorilla Glue or whatever it's called, and they failed. And instead, they created this glue that really lasts for a short amount of time, and for years, that failure just, was put in the corner. They didn't know what to do with that data until eventually somebody put the two to two together, and now we have post-it notes, and everybody uses them. So that to me is an example of not only unpredictability, but also going with what you have versus resisting it and spending more time and energy trying to develop it. And so that's just, anyway, that's kind of one of my examples. Okay, so
Yeah, that's a great one. If you want to have, if you want to get more examples, like just look at the history of Amazon as a company. Like these guys, they are constantly creating new products and they are killing them, even if they develop, even if they invested $1 billion in
right.
them. If, when they see they don't work, they just divest, they just kill them. And
Yeah.
it's and this is one of the hardest things to learn, especially for people who have a background in engineering or anyhow or have a background in doing work that is predictable. Because there, if you are an expert, you're successful in 99% of times. If you're a professional,
Right.
when you do things right, when you go to a car mechanic and you say, "Well, my car is kind of broke down. Could you please repair it?" You could expect it to be repaired well in 99% of cases, right? But that's not the case when you talk about what you just said, the example of dealing with your own employees. Like imagine your own employees have a conflict with each other. They don't talk about, they don't think along with you. So what can you change about your organization so that they start? Well,
Right.
guess what? Your percentage of the ideas that you're going to have that will be impactful is less than 20%. And that's tough. So if you are used to be having 99% everything working out, to going to somewhere where you expect that if you are good, you have less than 20% success. That's a tough thing to feel, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Real quick, you have mentioned your book a couple of times, and so I do want to take a couple of minutes and share the title of the book. And I love the title, by the way, The Art of Slicing Work: How to Navigate Unpredictable Projects. I just love that, The Art of Slicing Work. So I want to come back to your book in a second, but before we move on, I want to ask about Scrum. This is something that I'm not familiar with. So give us a quick overview. What is Scrum?
So Scrum is a framework. It's for how to build processes within your organization. And it's actually pretty simple. It says if you're working on unpredictable problems, take a team that is going to be cross-functional. Do not take experts individually, take a team of experts and ask them to deliver wholesome things that I call slices in my book. And ask these guys to not work on slices that have to be worked on for more than a month. At
Okay.
most a month. Much better is 1 week or so. And ensure that once these guys have created a result, that they get feedback for how valuable it was. That these guys are sitting there and they're getting feedback for, was it worth it, what we've done? And to get this feedback not from a manager, but from the people they've built it for. So if you cook a meal, it's the people who are going to eat it. If you build a
Right.
house, it's the people who are going to live in it, right? And after that, these guys have learned what how valuable it was. They have to consult with each other. Now take, you know, t take take all this learning and internalize it, and then they try another time. And that's basically the routine that they have. They kind of iterate one result after the other. And those principles behind Scrum are actually the principles behind what I've laid out in my book. In fact, the funny thing is a lot of people think that Scrum is something that is completely in software world, but it
Right.
actually originated from hardware products. It's originated from 86 paper written by two by a Harvard professor in the Harvard Business Review. It's called the New Product Development Game, and they looked at hardware products that were developed in those days and that were successful in the market. And they kind of looked at, well, what were the organizations working like as compared to some standard approaches? And they realized that this Scrum thing, I'm not sure that our audience is familiar with the word Scrum. It's actually from rugby, since
That's what I thought. That's what
right, it's
I
Scrum is a moment when in rugby the players are trying to figure out which team is going to get the ball. So they're kind of pushing, both teams are kind of scrummed with each other and they
Right.
trying to push the other team away. So that's basically the picture. That's the metaphor for them, for the authors of this original paper. This was the metaphor for how good well a team works, right? And it was compared to a race where only individuals kind of run their own trek
Gotcha.
instead of a whole team.
Okay, so real quick, the book again is The Art of Slicing, The Art of Slicing Work, How to Navigate Unpredictable Projects. So tell me a little bit about the title. You came up with your own term there, slicing work. How did you come up with this?
Actually, it's not completely on my own. It's
Okay.
actually quite a standard term within our
Industry.
within the agile world. However, it's a skill that is typically, it's kind of assumed. No one really talks about it like it's the skill. But from my point of view, it kind of if you understand this, if you focus on this one part, then it's the right focus. What we need to understand, if you are an entrepreneur, if you are running a company, there is thousands of things that you could focus on. And if you listen to different consultants, everyone will tell you, focus on this, focus on that, focus on the other thing. And if you cannot focus on everything at the same time, especially not if there's unpredictability coming around, right? So the question is, what do I focus on that actually matters? And
Right.
the book and all of my experience is telling me, what people need to be focused on are actually pragmatic results. But it's hard for most projects that we're talking about, and the ones that I've that I those examples that I've given you, like introducing a CRM system so that people are more coordinated, or like those real business projects, breaking up work isn't an intuitive thing. Or put it differently, we can break up work in different ways. And the way that we would normally do it intuitively is not the one that helps us. So if we understand how to break up work so we can create those wholesome results that I just said when I explained Scrum, if we can learn to do that and break up large several years of projects into small bites that can be delivered within a week or two so that small teams can actually deliver and learn from them, that is the skill. And that is the skill that is helping focusing the whole organization, because the people who are doing the work need to know, well, what is the result that the manager is expecting from me? And the manager, he doesn't need to know, well, are these people doing Scrum? Are these people doing any kind of agile Kanban? Whatever. What are they trying to get things done or whatever? What I want them to do, I want them to show me results, and I want to know whether these results actually move the needle for my customers. But most of us, when we manage our organization, we go to our experts to break up work. We ask them, well, what can you deliver me? When can I see
Right.
something? And very often, what I see the projects that I support is that we have one deliverable. Like we do have many deliverables, but they are all not something that a customer could see. nothing that a customer could give any valuable feedback to. So if we look at the things that are actually visible to our customers or new or users, we end up having maybe one or two deliverables within a year. So I don't know, as a manager, as a sponsor of such a project, as the person who actually gives his money for this, I very rarely get any feedback. I don't know where are we at. And that's a very common problem for sponsors, for people with the money. And so the main skill that they need to learn, their organizations need to learn, that will allow them to align the very top of their organization with the very people who are doing the work, is those slices and the definition of the slices. It's not actually not the hard skill to learn, but it's kind of it requires you to kind of it kind of moves your head around 90 degrees. It, like you're looking at the same thing, but just from a different angle, and suddenly you see it all falls into place
In
and makes
place,
sense.
sure. Yeah. One of the things in your book, you talk about transparency, the importance of transparency. And I think that this is such an important thing because I know early on in my career, transparency was unheard of, right? I mean, everybody was locked down, and in some cases, I remember I had an assignment for Exxon, and Exxon. This is back, I can say this is back 30 plus years ago, very non-transparent. I mean, they almost they wanted to keep everybody in their own separate department, and information going up and downstream was non-existent. So give us your thoughts on transparency.
And what you're just describing, I've also experienced this in multiple organizations that I worked for when I was an employee. And the reason for this, it makes sense. If you're working in an environment that is predictable, it does not make sense to be too transparent. Because if I know what I want you to do, I would like to give you only the information that you need. Because why would I over communicate? That would just, invite you to question a lot of things. It would take some time. It would reduce our efficiency, right? So why would I? The question becomes very important of what is in the information that I want to share that you need, and I will only need share this. But in an organization that deals with unpredictability most of the time, you don't know where the surprise is going to hit. You don't know what kind of thing is not going to work out. So this thinking kind of breaks down. And the transparency is so that's kind of like where it's culturally coming from. But the transparency can also be abused, right? So there's a lot of people say, well, just give me transparency. I want to know everything that you do. And then people become afraid, and they are a little bit afraid of being micromanaged and controlled, right? Because if I know everything you do, I may have an opinion on everything you do. And everyone being in an organization, knowing everything everyone else does, well, that's just your brain explodes. So the question is, what is it that we need a transparency on? So what are the things that we want to be really, really honest about? And these are the things that move the needle. Again, the slices. So what I want to be transparent about, and that's the hardest thing for organizations to learn, is to actually open themselves up to understanding, is what we've done in the last 2 weeks, has this moved the needle? Has this brought us closer to our final goal or not? And transparency about this is the core thing. And this is easy to say, easier said than done. This
Right.
is easier created than done. And the main thing, and it, now actually some of the things that we talked already about come together. In order for this to happen, we need to know what is the little piece of work that we could deliver so customers can tell us something about it. But at the same time, we also need to have those customers close. We need to have talked with them about that. We need to have told them, hey guys, we're going to show you something in 2 weeks, and would really love you to be honest about it. And it's not going to be the full thing that you expect from us. You may not be used to this, but we really need to know, because if you tell us only in 3 months now from now, we will have gone in ways that will be just wasteful for you. So the earlier you tell us your honest feedback, the better. And this conversation is really hard to be had, especially in some industries. Some of my clients, they're working in tremendously competitive industries, And they're really they have real serious reasons to be afraid that if information gets out, their competitors may use it against them, and all hell can break loose. So what what these organizations do is they can kind of create kind of pools of people, of organizations that are working with them, that signed NDAs and all that kind of stuff. They kind of create something that I call a feedback infrastructure. So they have to kind of really set something in place so that they can get reliable feedback without compromising their business, in a
Yeah, I
word.
like that. And you're right. That to me makes sense. That if it's a very stable environment, transparency isn't as necessary. In an unpredictable environment, I think transparent. I could see where transparency would be more important. And so, when you're dealing in these unpredictable environments, besides having transparency, creating these feedback loops, what's the next important step?
Well, once you basically, well, there's this picture, right? So those are the three kind of the three pillars of Scrum, you could say, right? So the first one is transparency. The second one is actually using this transparency, so taking time aside to actually inspect and look. And the
Okay.
third one is to, when you see that you need to change something, adapt. And a nice picture of this, or a nice metaphor for this, is something we all know is driving a car. Because when you drive a car, the situation on the street is unpredictable. You don't know who's going to participate with you in this process of driving a car and what's going to be the situation on the street. So no one is ever planning, what lane they're going to take and what speed they're going to run, and just follow this plan no matter what happens on the street, right? So we
Right.
look. So when we drive a car, actually everything in the car is created, if you are in the driver's seat, is there to optimize the transparency for you, right? You have windshield, you have glass everywhere, you have those mirrors that show you what's going on behind you. You have this dashboard that tells you don't have to do anything. Everything is just transparent all the time. And
Right.
then what you need to do is, obviously, you need to look at the street, right? Not write an SMS on your mobile phone. That's something not to do. And if suddenly the person in front of you breaks, then you also break, right? So you have everything in your control, the wheel, the gas pedal, the brake pedal, and so forth, to adapt, right? And those are the three ingredients: transparency, inspection, and adaptation. And those when you have an organization that is dealing with unpredictability, what very often, when you like look at this from this eagle eye point of view, very often you have an organization that will have no windshield at all, or the windshield will be just it, you can't look through it. So there's nothing to be seen. Or you have an organization with a windshield, so people are looking through it, but they could look through it, but they just never looking out. So they always, inside the car, talking with each other. No one is looking and understanding what's going on outside. Or the organization is actually doing the two things, but the person understanding what's going on and seeing that they are right now driving into the car that has pushed the brakes in front of them, he just doesn't have access to the brakes, and he has to talk to someone else, and it's going to be a long meeting. And these other people, they don't have access to the windshield. So is looking at this picture, you can understand easily what can go wrong in an organization.
All right, so we have transparency, inspection, and adaptation. And so we talked quite a bit about transparency. What does inspection look like? Am I taking, you mentioned it's a 30-day deliverable. So am I inspecting daily? Am I inspecting weekly? Or is it just on a per project basis?
Well, it depends on how fast something changes in your environment, right? And the faster you can inspect, the faster you can see actual results, the better it is. Because one thing that we need to really understand, and that's something that also our listeners may recognize, is the slower you learn, the longer the time, the less you can actually apply what you've learned. So if you imagine, for example, you try to learn something new, you try to learn to play guitar, and this guitar sound only comes 15 minutes after you've strung a chord, right? How long is it going to take for you to learn this guitar? It's going to be a very painful process. Like, imagine if the sound comes 10 seconds later. It's kind of possible. It's still going to be hard. But in your organization, if you're if what I've done today, the decisions that we've done, that we've made today, if we get feedback for them at the end of this month, well, maybe we can still remember what we've done there. But if we get the feedback at the end of the year or at the end of 2 years, which is typically what happens with long-term projects, like with project lessons learned done once, there is no chance of learning. There's no way there's any learning occurring. So to your question, what does inspection look like? Basically, inspection look the main ingredient of inspection is showing what we've done to people whom we've done it for.
Yeah.
So if I create a new CRM system, it's the people who are going to be using it. I just put it in front of them and I ask them, could you please find a new client? You should be able to find it within this new system. Can you please do this and try to draft an email to them? And then find an email your colleague has drafted to them. And can you do that? And then you just quiet and you look at people trying out whatever you've built. Or you increase the quality of your process of how you care for elderly people in your nonprofit, and you change something about your processes within this week. Well, you need to a way to realize to find out, did this week d were we better at serving our elderly people this week, and
Right,
so
right.
forth. So whatever it is, you need to get, this is the heart of inspection, to get this honest feedback, to get this reality check for whatever you've done.
Yeah, it reminds me of a story of Continental Airlines here in the United States. Continental Airlines at one point was one of the worst airlines, if not the worst airlines. The employees didn't like to work there. They were terrible at delivering customer service. They finally got the CEO. I can't remember his name, but one of the things that he started doing is he started giving, I think it was like a $65 or $75 bonus. This is going back again 25, 30 years ago. Every month that they had an on-time departure for the entire month, they had a perfect score. Everybody in the company would get this bonus. And you're talking about, I forgot how many thousands of employees, but you imagine Continental Airlines. So they were paying out $2, $3, $4 million every month when they, when they hit those targets, right? And so that he would they would inspect as to why it was working, and they would also inspect as to why it wasn't working. And I like your analogy about that 10-second sound delay. If you were trying to learn a guitar and it took 10 seconds or 15 minutes, what a much longer process that would take. And listening to you kind of reminded me of what NASA goes through when they, they're trying to communicate with the rover on Mars, and they have, and it's 2 or 3 hour delay. And so
You're right,
you're
yeah.
moving, you're moving just little tiny steps. What's the hardest thing about adapting?
I think that's a great question, and it so much fits with what you just the example that you just given from this airline, because this example is illustrating one very important thing, and it's something that most organizations fail at creating. It's basically the same incentives for the people, because very often what we have in our organizations today, what I see is basically if we have 1,000 people, we will have 1,000 different incentives. So they will have had different people they talk to, and then it will have different yearly goals. And then we have an organization with 1,000 people who where everyone thinks, well, if I, can manage that this plane is booked well, then I will get my bonus. And the other person thinks, well, I will get my bonus if this plane is technically in the best shape. And the other person thinks that she'll get her bonus if every passenger in the plane is well fed or something, right? And you will have an organization where everyone is looking at something different. And this ability to and this is something only that can be done only at certain level of hierarchy. That's why just talking about it with everyone in an organization doesn't really make much difference. You need to have a certain level of hierarchy to be able to establish the structure, to be able to change how the incentive structure is done. And if you are able to create a structure where you say, guys, You are only getting a bonus. We are only saying that we've done a good job. We don't even have to make it a bonus at all. It's just about what do we consider being a good job done, right? And if we are saying you've done a good job if we're all on time, if I don't know, we've saved that much kerosene this year. This,
Right.
but we all together. Then what you are doing is, people maybe get confused. They say, well, but what, how can I influence this? Well, guess what? You have a little influence in this, and every one of us has a little influence in this. And what I want you to do is, if you think that you cannot influence this, but your colleague can, I want you to talk to them. I don't want you to think, well, it's not my job. My job is just little thingy here. What, and this is the hardest part about adapting. This is the hardest part about organizations. Creating the, you need to create, you need to take this, the step of asking people to be responsible for the whole result as a group. And if you do this step, I assure you, you're gonna have a multiple times the productivity that you had before. But you need to do this. If you take this step, you will get there.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Okay, so when you are taking on a project, and you're, I don't know what your framework is. What do you start looking at? Are you looking at key ways that this organization is communicating, and or are you looking at, are you trying to identify unpredictable areas of a project? When you come into a project, where do you start?
I always start with what matters most to the people in the organization, and those are the results. And if I'm talking to the people who don't care for the results, they're not the right people to talk to. So to be honest, in the beginning, this process of assignment clarification, it's a lot of times asking the same question in different ways of how will you see that your organization is successful if I do my job, or if someone else does their job well, what does it mean? Successful in for you to be successful in 3 months or in 6 months. What does it look like? And what I focus on are the results that this organization delivers to their clients. And once we have established that, in many organizations, they're very clear that this doesn't take that much time. So many organizations, especially if you talk to the CEO, if you have, especially the higher up of the hierarchy, you talk to people, when you speak to the founders, they are typically very concise and very clear on this. Because they have to, they have to pitch it to stakeholders. They cannot, be fluffy about that. But then the second step, is to ask ourselves, and I can give my own input for that, but I'm rarely an expert in their field. So I would ask them, what do you think? Like, imagine you failed on all possible accounts. What are the different things that failed in 6 months? What are all the different things that you can imagine that have failed? And typically what we'll collect there is a list of maybe five, maybe 10 different realistic risks that can actually occur. And all these risks are connected to, most of the time, they're connected to many different unpredictable factors. And having that, we kind of already established what are the results that we want to have. And the second step is what are maybe our kind of impediments, right, or the risks. And the last step is now is to ask ourselves, so with what intermediary result could we prove to an outside person, not just to us, that because inside we all like our ideas and we all are in love with our ideas, but what result could really prove to us that the risks that we've just said that exist isn't there? How can we, what result would prove to us that this risk isn't there? So if it is that we are, changing some processes in our, to ensure quality, and we think that maybe the new quality processes, no matter how great we think they are, our people just won't use them.
Right.
We'll set up, if that's a risk, we can think, well, how about us, trying to, think about the most difficult things for the people to change and implement one change in half a month, in 2 weeks, and just see, will anyone, will people go along with it? And if people do, we know that's not a risk anymore, right? So and suddenly by creating those results that prove to us that the risk isn't there anymore, we start focusing on those slices. Those are the slices, those results that actually deliver value, diffuse risk, or actually show us that we can make concrete steps. Those are they're kind of the cornerstones of the new structure. And from there on, we can ask ourselves, so who are the people who could deliver such a result? And then we come up with a with those cross with a cross-functional team. We can ask ourselves, how fast can they do that? What do they need for this? Then we may create the environment. All of those questions, they kind of, again, fall in place once we focus on the real result. And the results, they come from those final results of our organization.
One of the things I was going to ask you, and I think you answered it, because I was thinking, one of the issues, challenges with making changes in any organization is that making the change itself is unpredictable and it causes anxiety. And so I was going to ask you, how do you prepare people for those anxieties? But it sounds like by making these small steps, instead of coming in and saying, hey, we're going to change these 10 things, maybe you come in and you do that one change, see how people react. As you said, get them comfortable realizing that they can be successful with this change. That's got to be one way of reducing those anxieties.
Absolutely.
I think it's a
And
brilliant way of doing it.
yeah, absolutely. And there is nothing more, when I look at the amount of people who resist in the first moments,
Right.
when any change happens, as compared to the amount of people who resist the changing after they've seen some actual results happening. This is incomparable. Like in the beginning, maybe 80% would be resisting, but never more than 10% in the end. Because when you actually see a result, you typically people have worked in an organization for so long and they've seen so many change initiatives, they know that they are kind of a lot of them are fake.
Right.
So when a new guy comes in and says, "Well, we're going to change something," well, there is no trust there. But
Right.
if you see actually something changing and you'd say, "Well, guys, look at what we've done, just a month ago and what we're doing now. Can you see how it's better? And even though it was painful to get here, and even though it's not complete or perfect, but can you see the difference now?" And you need to actually collect the data to show it. Now, but once people see the differences and once people understand that the painful process of change has actually led to something useful, the amount of people who are still in resistance who are still resisting it is way lower. And if you can chunk this whole change down in little pieces, that is exactly what is making it easier. There are a couple of more strategies actually. The one thing you need to really, really, really do is you need to start with volunteers. So
Oh, I
don't
like that.
that's a really important, very small tool, but really, really, you need to always start with volunteers, because you need to say, "Hey guys, we're going to change this about our company, and we need this kind of skills for that. Who'd like to join?" And
Right.
you will always have some people in the company who are fed up with something that's not been working for some time, and some people who are just comfortable or who have other things in their lives that they want to, be paying attention to, so they don't want this change, and that's fine. But as long as you start with the people who actually want, who want to volunteer, that's very often a game changer.
No, I think that's one of my biggest takeaway from today's show is that asking for volunteers. If you look at any large, successful software company, that's what they do. They ask for volunteers. They call them beta testers. Who wants to volunteer? And they set it up for success. Hey, this is going to be this, and it may be difficult. And as you mentioned before, it's not 100% finished, but we want you to test out this section here or this module or whatever. Give us some feedback. I love this idea, Anton, of asking for volunteers because they're already open. They want change. They want to see what this is going to be about. And I also like your other point about so many times people attempt to make a change, and now the employees, they're hearing it for the fifth time or the 10th time or the 100th time, and they just roll their eyes. Says, okay, this is going to last about 5 minutes or 5 days, and then we can go back to normal. And so, but I love asking for volunteers. I think that's brilliant. Such a simple thing, but so impactful. All right. So let me ask you this. Here you are. Again, I want to shout out the book real quick. The book is The Art of Slicing Work. I just love that. The Art of Slicing Work, How to Navigate Unpredictable Projects. What was the catalyst? What motivated you to write this book?
Oh, it's just the amount of people from my trainings asking me. So, being a Scrum trainer, for the last 6 years, I've been giving trainings a lot to a lot of people. So, half of my time, I'm basically giving trainings. Some of my time, I'm working with different clients. Every time people come from my trainings, they kind of, Anton, you're telling all these stories, and they don't have anything to do with software, and they're also easy to understand. Do you have? Kind of, I wasn't able to capture all of them. Do you have a book or something? Can you point me to something? And some things are written in my blog, but basically it took me a couple of years to put all of those examples into one framework and into one fitting book, so they all kind of work with each other. So this is basically a lot of people asking me
That's
and
great.
me.
That's the best way of that's a great reason. I mean, there's been a lot of great companies, brands that have started with the blog. Bulletproof Coffee, Bulletproof, the whole Bulletproof brand started with David Osprey's blog, and then he wrote a book, and then he wrote another book, and so several companies start that way. So it's great that your people love you so much that they say, "Hey, I want to know more stories." All right, listen, we're going to wrap up here, but I wanted to ask you something completely off topic. Who do people say you look like? What famous person do people say you look like?
Oh, there is a there is a okay there is a Russian poet, Vladimir Nabokov. He emigrated to, I think, to US at some point. That's the person people tell me I
Okay,
look
really?
like.
Okay. All right. I was thinking Daniel Radcliffe, the actor from Harry Potter.
Oh yes, oh my God, yeah, there was someone telling me that.
Oh, that'd be great. I mean, hey, if the agile coach thing doesn't work out, you can start doing some side gigs as a Harry Potter I'm sorry, Daniel Radcliffe impersonator, so that would be great.
My place on oh was it anyway Fifth Avenue, I think.
Fifth Avenue,
Yeah, I'll do
what do you
that.
call it, the Walk of Fame, in Hollywood. Anyway, Anton, it's been fantastic getting to know you. I appreciate you coming on here, sharing some of your insights, and I'm hoping that our people are walking away with some great tips because you dropped some great tips today. One more time, everybody, I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but please check out Anton's book, The Art of Slicing Work: How to Navigate Unpredictable Projects. Anton, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you so much for this conversation. It's been great.
You bet.